from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Oh, I know what the biggest topic in everybody's workplace is going to be today. I can already tell you. Now, Ursula, I just want you to know that I made a declaration on Facebook.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And what is that? I haven't seen it yet.
Here it is. I don't trust anyone that immediately changes the clock to the right time in your car, on your microwave, or on your stove after some daylight savings. I don't trust you. You gotta let it simmer for a few days. I wanna get into your car and the time is wrong. How about that?
Then you don't trust me. Because it was changed within a minute of me getting into my car yesterday.
Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. Hey, we're going to be talking about a lot of different things today, including these two major bank failures just in the past couple of days. What is it all going to mean for your money? So we will get into that because there are some local implications. And then we're going to talk about the types of people in the workplace that G apparently says he really dislikes. Was that kind of how you put it? Advice of the people you need to seek out in the office to make it in your workplace.
Yeah. I don't have any problem with them. I got a problem with the lesson.
Okay, this advice that's coming. Yeah. That's at 9:47. Yeah. But right now, we want you to engage with us. Our state roofing text line is 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO. And just a reminder, make sure that you also stream or check us out on our CHIRO Radio app, because we've got all these cameras on us right now.
Yeah, we do.
And if you want to see the faces that we make while we're, you know, telling some of our stories or some of the interactions that happen.
Or when I get up and walk towards the door.
Yeah. Or when G in the middle of a segment will just stand up and I'm like, wait, where are you going?
And then how about when I'm looking for my paper? Because remember Paul? Yes. Paul would do the staple. I talked about that last week.
Yes.
And his chef came back this week. And guess what chef did?
Stapled it incorrectly?
No, it gave us nothing.
Oh.
It literally gave us nothing.
You haven't heard about Do Nothing Mondays?
Oh.
Minimum effort in Mondays? I'm here for it, buddy.
That's right. Yeah. There's a new movement, Minimum Effort Mondays.
Of course.
You want to just ease into the week.
So let me guess. These damn Gen Zs started that too. Huh,
no,
Nick?
I didn't change my clock. You'll get it at 10.
Yeah, we're trying to roll it back over here. We're cutting things up.
All right. Well, let's try it right now. It's time to get to people that won't. Ursa's Top News Stories of the Day brought to you by Way, Scar 40, Susu in Auburn.
As we fight through our fatigue this morning after losing that hour of sleep, you might be wondering, whatever happened to the effort in Congress to make daylight saving time permanent? Last year, the Senate voted to end the practice of changing our clocks twice a year.
Switching in and out of daylight savings time is outdated. Frankly, it's just dumb.
That is Republican Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, who was one of 12 senators who were pushing the Sunshine Protection Act. It had bipartisan support. Washington Democrat Patty Murray is also a strong proponent.
It will mean that we won't have an extra hour of dark in the winter, but most importantly, we won't have to go through this changing of the clocks anymore. If we can get it passed through the House and to the president, it'd be a great day.
But the bill failed to even get a vote last year in the U.S. House because lawmakers couldn't agree on whether to keep standard time or permanent daylight saving time. So the changing of our clocks continues.
Keep this right here. Look, man, I don't want to get on here and complain. I really don't. Because in my opinion, I feel like the younger whippersnappers of the world are fine. They had no problem.
Going back and forth?
Yeah, they got no problem. You know, they can do anything. Matter of fact, they can fall, you know, hurt their leg a little bit, brush it off 5 minutes later, be good. Folks like me get a little kink in their neck, started about a month and a half ago. Today, neck locks up. I got all kinds of problems. With the whole daylight savings thing, and this, Ursula, it's bad. It's bad because this morning, I woke up this morning at 4:30 this morning, and I'm telling you right now, I looked up to myself, and I said, Self, are you okay? No, I was not okay this morning. I felt it, Ursula.
Yeah.
My body is feeling it even right now.
Yes.
I want coffee so bad. I want coffee bad right now.
I had to drink a Diet Coke because I don't do coffee. But I was like, I can't make it through the morning. If I were to vote on this today, I would say stop the madness.
Yeah.
Make daylight saving time permanent.
Yeah.
But in a couple of months from now, I'm going to be absolutely giddy when it's still light out at 8 or 9 o'clock at night.
Leave it like this. This time, right here.
Okay. So just don't do the fall back.
Nobody in life wants to fall back. It sounds terrible in the first place.
Except that extra hour of sleep is always kind of fun.
You really change your clock? I don't trust you. Yeah. You in the kitchen,
hey,
on
you know
the
what?
Stove, all
you
that?
Still call it daylight savings time. I don't trust you.
Gonna go to Pike's Place Market tomorrow.
I call it Fresh Fridays.
There you go. At least you're consistent.
I can't. You really got in the car yesterday.
Yes.
And you changed it right away. Come on, Ursula, really?
Yeah. And you know what Mark does?
What do you do?
He changes it before it even happens. So the night before, he's the best.
I really don't trust Long Live Mark. Y'all changing your clocks. All right, let's go.
Yes. Okay, President Biden is trying to reassure all of us that the country's banking system remains stable despite two major bank failures within the past 72 hours, Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank.
All customers who had deposits in these banks can rest assured. I'm going to rest assured they'll be protected and they'll have access to their money as of today.
Silicon Valley Bank is the second largest bank failure after the collapse of Washington Mutual back in 2008. And President Biden promises that taxpayers are not going to be paying for these losses, and the feds are going to go after those responsible for the mess.
The management of these banks will be fired. If the bank is taken over by FDIC, the people running the bank should not work there anymore.
CBS business analyst Jill Schlesinger says the president has been very clear about who the government is going to make whole.
He said the depositors are going to be saved. The banks, their shareholders and management, they will not be saved. That is very different than 2008. This is not a bailout. This is a rescue for depositors only.
Warren Buffett. I want to quote the great Warren Buffett. He said, Ursula, you don't know who's swimming naked until the tide goes out. Warren Buffett said it. Look it up, y'all. In this case right here, this is what we are seeing. We are seeing, who's got money and who doesn't. This here, Ursula, is really sad on what happened. All of this. You're talking about over 40,000 customers that SVB has, and most of whom are businesses that employ people. This whole thing, and they're talking about, and President Biden hearing him say, we're going to go after the managers and they're going to be fired. Look, this is not our industry. And the one thing that we have learned about the banking industry, and those that are in it are really good at it. They understand this stuff better than we do. They know when things are coming. Like, for an example, when their former chief risk officer, who quit and sold off millions months ago. Do you think that that's a coincidence?
No, but what ended up happening is all these people, I mean, there was a line out the door on the branches, especially down there in Santa Clara, where people were taking out their money because they thought, okay, wait a minute.
They were scared.
You know, they were scared with interest rates going up. Silicon Valley Bank was basically flagging and saying, hey, this is going to actually hurt us and we might not, be able to continue. And with that fear, all these people start yanking out their money. Suddenly there's no money. Suddenly you've got people who own businesses, and a lot of these are startup companies, and quite a few of them are here in the state of Washington, where they do work with this particular bank, Silicon Valley Bank. So I think the fallout is still to be seen. So good thing that the federal government did step in. And personally, I think it is a good thing to hear that, wait a minute, as of right now, taxpayers are not going to be the ones on the hook, and it's not making those rich people whole. It's protecting a lot of the smaller folk.
It's protecting the depositors. Now,
yes. As
we know, I think, the chef, did you bring sound? Because we know that there used to be guardrails against this. There used to be things in place to make sure that these things wouldn't happen, but unfortunately, they were pulled back. Chef?
The legislation I'm signing today rolls back the crippling Dodd-Frank regulations that are crushing community banks. As a candidate, I pledged that we would rescue these community banks from the disaster of Dodd-Frank. And now we are keeping that commitment.
Now, I'm not, real quick, though, I'm having Chef play that sound. I'm not in the business of right now of blaming Donald Trump for this. That's not my whole thing, because this is bigger than that, right? This is something that if the Biden administration, when they got in, they knew that these things were in place. They knew that some of these guardrails were not there anymore. Okay. They sat there and they watched those things. So I'm not entirely putting it on him. But what I am saying is Ursula, a lot of this is, it should be infuriating. It was predictable and it was totally avoidable. But because those guardrails were removed, that was able to happen.
But you know who lobbied the strongest for the guardrails to be removed? The head of Silicon Valley Bank.
Yes.
The very bank that is now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In trouble. I mean, I'm not putting it on the former president. I am looking at it at it's basically be careful what you wish for.
Right. And what we're also going to see going forward is going to be the startups, right? The startups that are going to have to now go and find new VCs, venture capitalists, to help them out during a time where cash is king and nobody's going to want to come up out of their cash right now. So there's going to be a lot of startups with these loans. Will they have to pay those loans back faster now that the feds have taken over? So this is just the beginning.
Right. The Bellingham City Council could vote today on banning open drug use and unwanted behavior downtown. Mayor Seth Fleetwood has proposed making drug use in public a misdemeanor that could be punishable with jail time and treatment. Under this ordinance, people arrested would be transported directly to municipal court where their cases would be heard immediately. The mayor says this community court would not only hold them accountable, but would also connect them to social services to help them address their addiction and mental health.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. We can all agree that that needs to be enforced. Also, as we're doing that, we need to make sure that we're not just going after a small amount of people. We need to make sure we enforce it all. I looked up some research, Ursula. You'd be proud of your boy. Washington state law protects private marijuana use so you can consume it in the residence, but it is illegal to consume marijuana in public. I want to see y'all start arresting folks for that. Also in the state of Washington, Washington state law prohibits public alcohol consumption statewide. So unless you have an official event that holds a liquor license, you cannot be drink. That means you need to go after them soccer moms, all them little league moms that got them red cups out there. Go and arrest them too. So let's not just go after who we think. Let's go after everybody that is doing these illegal things in public.
Yeah, I think what they're trying to address, I get your point, G, but what they're trying to address is the people who, like, for example, my husband was telling me, people doing drugs openly. They were basically ignoring him and his need to actually pass through. And they were just, they didn't care what, you know, anyone could see him. They were doing it right then and there. And that's the kind of thing that sometimes you see downtown. You see it a lot of the light rail stations, et cetera. It's like people think that you can do it anywhere or in the light rail trains themselves. We've talked about that, or metro buses.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, here's a mayor who has said, you know what? We're going to actually hold you accountable if you're going to be doing it in public, because they have spent like $1 million in Bellingham trying to address these issues downtown. And because there's no consequence, no one gives a you know what, and they continue to do it. And that is actually impacting these businesses. So what he's saying, and the city council may be saying, is that we're not just going to do something about it, but we're going to help deal with the court part immediately. And then also address the fact that you need services for your addiction or your mental health or whatever. I love this idea.
Me too, because if you're drinking in public, you need help. If you just drink it outside just on a normal day, I think you need help. I think that is a substance abuse problem. If you're just openly drinking out in public, arrest them all.
Okay. You're making sense. It's been shut down for over a year after being overrun by homeless tents. But over the weekend, Seattle's Ballard Commons Park was reopened to the public. The park was swept after more than 40 arsons and 100 calls to police because of crime and other problems. Mike Stewart with the Ballard Alliance tells Cairo 7 TV the reopening of this park is a big deal.
Ballard is a hub urban village with tremendous amounts of density that's here and coming. happening. We're surrounded by multifamily buildings all around us. And to have this park space available, open, upgraded, is such a tremendous asset for this community.
As part of the renovation, the city installed new lighting. They added benches, removed graffiti, and planted trees. And a playground is going to be built in June.
This looks beautiful. I saw it, and I got to imagine that if you are a parent or someone who has the ability to either yourself go or take kids there, it looks really nice, Ursula, compared to what it looked like at the end of 2021. It looks really nice.
It does. I actually went to Ballard twice over the weekend. I love Ballard. We used to own a house there. We lived there for about 8 years before moving to the other side of the city. But it is in desperate need of a park. And that particular park, there was a huge encampment. And I just remember how many fires there were, explosions. You talk about drug activity, crime. And frankly, it took too long, but finally it has been cleared. There were about a dozen protesters there accusing the city of you know, terrorism and, you know, being overly aggressive with the homeless. And I would say, I would argue that it took too long to address that situation. And I'm glad for Ballard now that one of the things that the city was saying is that it took time. They had to try to find tiny houses and other living arrangements. And I think there were about 10 people who just refused to leave. And so they did not find permanent shelter for them.
But I saw those protesters. I was like, go home, Shelly. You know what I mean?
Shelly. You know, Shelly.
I don't know. Just first name came to my head. by the way, Ursula, 206 texts in and says, a red Solo cup is completely different than holding a 40 ounce. Your thoughts on that?
I would agree. Come on.
Interesting they chose a 40 ounce, though. They chose a 40 ounce.
I know.
Coming up next here on the G and Ursula Show, we got to get to serious business because, unfortunately, out there was a tragic crime that happened in Redmond last week. And Sam Campbell is going to follow up on that story next. G and Ursula.
To the G and Ursula Show. Happy Monday to all of you. And it was late last week when we learned of the murders of a Redmond podcaster and her husband, who were killed by her stalker in their home. And then the 38-year-old suspect killed himself. And our reporter, Sam Campbell, is in studio with us right now. And Sam, you have had a chance to go over some brand new documents that you just saw.
That's right, Ursula. We're getting a clearer picture from authorities on how this online acquaintance, or I don't know how you'd phrase it, but friendship, turned into something dark and obsessive and certainly concerning for the woman involved and her husband. Police told me when I was there on Friday morning, they were aware of this suspected stalker, a long haul trucker from Texas, they say, as they'd been following the case for months. Jill Green with the department says it started because he found her podcast.
He started asking her questions. They developed kind of a friendship until he just began barraging her with text messages and emails.
And we learned later from at a press conference from the police chief, Daryl Lowe, that they met actually on an audio chat room app called Clubhouse. And while he did listen to her podcast, that is where they met and conversed. And police say the woman reported it once. He once called her 100 times in a single day. And his behavior led to her and her husband filing a request for a protection order from the man. Just this morning, we've obtained a copy of that request. It details months of harassment and threats from the man, including things like he's saying he would show up at her house, set it on fire, only stop contacting her if he were dead, in the petition for the protection order. The couple also asks the state to strip the man of his weapons, which they say they are sure he had access to.
Okay, so what happened? Because he was a trucker, and Redmond police said that made it hard for them to find him.
That's right. Redmond police had told me, as well as our colleague reporter Nicole Jennings, that they had had problems actually serving this protection order to him because they couldn't find him. And as a long-haul trucker, he was going between states and states. But interesting to note, as I was leaving the scene yesterday and handing off coverage to Nicole, I had seen a red truck that police were arranging to be towed. And I had thought that that was interesting. So I had tipped Nicole and said, hey, you know, just so you know, police are arranging this red truck to be towed. And we learned later at that press conference where the chief speaks that they believe that red pickup truck with license plates from Oregon is how the suspect got there. It was parked about a block away.
When you say it was parked a block away, in front or behind the house?
In a street behind the house.
Behind the house. And I didn't see all the details of the story. Have they come out and said how he entered, where he entered in first? Can you take us through that?
My understanding after talking with detectives at the scene was that he entered through a side window in the house, the window being that of the victim, the woman's mother who was staying with them. And after he had entered, he had gotten into a fight with the mother. The mother eventually escapes, mm-hmm. runs to a neighbor's house to call 911 and ask for help. But by the time that police get there, they say that he had already fired four shots, killing the woman, wounding the husband, ultimately killing him after police failed to revive him with CPR and killing himself.
One last thing. I know that you have the report on the no contact order. And I'm sure you're going to find this out. When Redmond is tasked with trying to locate him, I would assume that they would probably use a third party to go and try to find him down in Texas location. Have you found out about how that works?
That's a question that I do have, G. And I was actually just talking with another reporter, Matt Markovich, about who would be in charge of this.
Sure.
Since Redmond obviously is very local jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. And if he was crossing state lines, whose responsibility would that be? And so we are going to do as much digging as we can and find out what authority would be in charge of taking over interstate investigations like that. But for now, I don't have an answer for you.
And Sam, the other thing is, this couple, they knew, they felt like he was dangerous. They'd gone to police. The police had given them also tips on how to keep themselves safe. But I see that there is a quote from the police chief who says, a restraining order is simply a piece of paper that allows officers to take enforcement action should a suspect violate the court order. But a piece of paper does not protect a person when someone is intent on causing them harm. And the police chief also said the family had taken steps to protect themselves. I mean, there really was almost nothing else that they could do.
You know, there are reports that this suspect had previously shown up and given the woman gifts before. And I am still reading through. This is a very long document, the petition for protection order, with a lot of attachments from the woman and her husband. So I'm still reading through it. But I came across one point of interest to me where they had listed a police case number as part of a police investigation when Redmond police were contacted about this man. I'm going to follow up with the Redmond police and see what that was about, if the man had previously shown up to her house at that time.
I just got
I think he also showed up. Sorry about that, G. He also showed up at some kind of conference where she was attending or speaking. I mean, so this person was obsessed. And I know that some experts say there are times when you take out a protection order or you have a restraining order, sometimes that can aggravate the situation too, which is, you know, again, what do you do?
Obviously, there were some threats, especially you mentioned, Sam, that there was a part where she had said in the order that he said, hey, I'm going to light your house on fire, and the only way I'll stop contacting you is if she's dead or if he's dead?
If he's dead.
If he's dead. My question, when you next time you talk to them, would be this. With a contact order like this, is every contact order, no contact order that goes out, are they all the same? Or are some of these flagged with urgency? And what is the difference between a no contact order and, yo, there's a warrant for your arrest because there's an immediate threat? I just need to know what makes them the urgency go up when it comes to these contact orders? So is a no contact order the same as if, hey, this person said that they were going to kill me, or, hey, this person said some not so nice things to me? Is there a difference in urgency in no contact orders?
And that's a great question, G, and one that I think we can draw some insight from when I spoke with Redmond Police initially, which was that detectives were concerned enough that they had actually asked for a warrant for this man's phone records. Here is Jill Green with the department.
Investigators felt like it really warranted actively investigating it and getting all the information, getting a warrant to get his phone records. And they even went to the family and gave them tips on trying to keep safe.
So something about this case, I think, indicated that detectives should be taking more action than just trying to serve a protection order, which they say they couldn't do.
Sure. Thank you, Sam Campbell. We really appreciate all your hard work, man. Look forward to talking to you again on hopefully some better news. Hey, coming up next, we need to talk. What we should do is talk about these bosses that I have here. That's what we should do. But we were going to talk about the five types of influential people that you should always befriend at work. There's five types, y'all, and we're going to tell you all five of those types next. Gene Ursula. It is the G and Ursula Show. Coming up at 10:06, this will be a first. We're going to be talking to the Kent mayor. Dana Ralph is going to be joining the show. Looking forward to that discussion that happens at 10:06. But right now, we need to talk, y'all. So the Huffington Post says that there are five types of people that you need to make friends with at work. I'm going to go through them. And two questions I have for you. The first question is do you have one of these friends? And the second one is, are you one of these? Here you go. Number one, the veterans, people who've worked in an organization the longest and those who can help you learn how to effectively navigate the system and navigate work. So you want to get good with the veterans. Number two, the socialites, people who are known and respected around the organization and who can introduce you to the right people at the right time. Number three, the gatekeepers. The gatekeepers in the office are often the assistants, those who work closely with the senior leaders and who can influence whether you get to meet with those senior leaders. Number four, this was a good one, the politician. The politician understands that doing the job alone is not enough to climb the corporate ladder. They are the experts at navigating office politics as confident strategists who speak up to make their achievements known and visible to decision makers. They also are motivated by power as well. And then you have, Ursula, the mediators, you know, the ones that want to try to make things right between everyone going on, but sometimes can be one-sided. But anyway, you have the mediators. You have the mediators in the office as well. Okay, Ursula, you got it. The mediators, the politicians, the gatekeepers, the socialites, and the veterans. Ursula, which one are you?
No, I want you to tell me which one I am, because I'll tell you who you are.
Okay. All right.
You're definitely the socialite.
Am I, though?
Yes.
Because I get accused of, sure?
You're a socialite. You're the socialite with certain factions. If you decide that you don't like somebody, you ain't talking to them. I talk to everybody.
Exactly. You're the Switzerland. You're the mediator here in the office.
And I was thinking, definitely I'm a veteran.
You're definitely a veteran,
and no. I'm definitely a mediator.
I think that you're more of a socialite than I am,
and maybe here. I am too.
See,
so in other words, you need to get good with me, and being good with me helps you.
Wait, hold on. That's not a myth. That's an actual fact here at Cairo Radio. You better get good with Ursula. Now, Chef's sitting there smirking because Chef's like, yep. And Nick's like, yep. You get no credit being good with me.
That's right.
That's a fact. It doesn't matter if you're good with me. You got to get good with Ursula. Chef?
Well, I'm just amused because I'm apparently none of these things on the list. So you don't want to get to know me at the office. Don't make friends with Chef. And I'm just laughing, G, because, I mean, socialite, the five people you need to get to know at work, you know all of these people. This is your office strategy. You know everyone, and there's nobody in the office that is in every single boss's office more than you.
That's correct.
So I mean, this is a solid G Scott strategy.
Let me speak on that. There's only one boss's office that technically two. You got to count the news director. I go in those two, and if you've ever seen the movie Step Brothers, go look at the picture. That's what our bosses look like. No, I'm being serious. They look exactly like the picture in Step Brothers. That's one, and that's the other. Now, I do go in their office because they cool, right? They're like, they safe to me. That's what I call them. They're safe. I don't go in any other boss's office. I don't go upstairs anymore. I don't go up to the third floor. See, that's where you get in trouble. Up to the third floor.
When did that change? Because there was a time when you would go up to the third floor. I'm thinking, how do you have time to do it?
Because I would go and get the Americano up there.
Ah.
Yeah. But
okay,
I figured out the Americano doesn't taste like I thought it did.
I tell you what.
What?
When I first started here, I would agree. I mean, I got to know the veterans. I asked them the rope. And it's still strange for me to wrap my head around the fact that, ooh, I'm now the veteran.
Yeah.
Dave Ross is the only one who has been here longer than me. And the thing with Dave...
Dave Ross is neither of those.
The thing with Dave is he just is so too... You know, I love picking his brain, but he is someone who just doesn't engage in office politics whatsoever.
No.
And I think that has worked out very well for him. And maybe I'm just someone who's probably a little bit too nosy.
Yeah. Oh, no. No, don't take my yeah. I'm just, you know, yeah. Oh, I'm just going along with the conversation.
I got you.
Now, I don't know who the gatekeepers are. Who would be the assistant?
That would be human resources. That would be Patty.
Right. Front desk. Well, see, that's the thing. I've learned that when people come to corporate America, they usually aren't cool with people that... You know what I mean? That they deem to be, oh, I don't need to be cool with that. You don't talk to the janitor, or you don't talk to this person. See, those are my favorite people.
Mine too.
Those are my favorite people.
Your wife in her role would be a gatekeeper.
That's right. That's right. Gatekeeper to me. That's right. Hey, coming up next here on the G and Ursula Show, the mayor of Kent, Dana Ralph, is going to come on the show, and she's going to be talking about the state of her city. We do that next. Gina Ursula.